1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until three today. I'm going to go straight to William Mara now. Good afternoon, William.
Hi, how are you?
William, a lot of people will have at this stage attended, or before the lockdown will have attended, Bingo Loco. You're one of the directors of Bingo Loco. In case people didn't, can you tell us what it's all about?
Yeah, so Bingo Loco is an interactive stage-based performance where we have MCs and DJs and dancers, and we kind of use comedy and music to get an audience engaged with a kind of a scripted show on stage. We do about, 300 to 400 events per year in Ireland, as well as doing events in places like Australia, the Middle East, the UK, and around North America as well. Typically using kind of bingo as a novelty focal point to kind of bring the script throughout the time, entire night, and get people dancing.
So it's a wild, cracked night out, basically.
It's a high energy, fun night out, usually kind of for, kind of for groups that would kind of try to get together and go out and socialise.
Okay, then obviously, because obviously it's all built around socialising, you haven't been able to stage any Bingo Loco events over the past year and a half.
No, sadly not. Since, March 2020, we had, 36 locations in Ireland on sale, several events coming up. We had to basically kind of cancel and reschedule everything, and we haven't been able to do a physical event, within Ireland since then. And it's been an absolute disastrous period. And what's made it worse is the fact that to date, none of the supports that have been supposedly for our sector have been given to us. We've been denied grants for the COVID restriction support scheme, the COVID-19 adaptation fund, two or three other ones, but namely as well, the live performance support scheme for 2020, which was purely for, our sector. And as well, again, in the last few days, we're after getting rejected for the live performance support scheme for 2021. And this is a support scheme that's in place for, our industry, who provides live entertainment. And we were so disappointed, primarily because we're seeing six-figure grants being awarded to other entities that have no trading history. It might be their inaugural event. They've got no track record of hiring any staff. Some of them are student promoters doing very small novice entertainment. Some of them are brand new limited entities. I'm even seeing, one entity getting, 126,000 euros, and pretty much the person who received that is a full-time job and does cover band gigs on the side. When you compare that to, and I'm really pulling my hair out here, because I'm comparing that to, our 3 years of trading history, and we paid the Irish revenue 1.2 million euros in tax. We've got 800 events behind us, and yet every time we go to get a grant, we've been told that, sorry, we don't meet the criteria. So there's loads of people trying. We can't give everyone money at this time.
Yeah.
When we're asking them, we're going, okay, that's fine. Well, what's the criteria that you've marked us down on? And nearly all of the kind of the marking criteria is, and I'm very gravely worried, because it's completely inaccurate. They've marked it very, very poorly. Things like, you're not on geographical spread, but we're in every single county doing regular events, entertaining, thousands of people. So
you got marked down for, and I should just say, because I know you made a reference to other entities that did were successful in getting these grants this week, and I'm sure the department, I'm looking at the statement here from the Minister, Minister Catherine Martin, saying the department acknowledges and appreciates the work and effort that went into preparing all these applications. There was over 400 applications, and I think 237 organisations benefited in the end. And I'm sure they will say that all of those 237 were very well deserving, and they had, for various reasons, met criteria that they had put in place. But you say that when you look at the criteria, you cannot understand why Bingo Loco didn't come through and wasn't successful.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, especially seeing as, when we were denied the last time, they were saying, don't worry, there's going to be another round of this coming now, the live performance support scheme for 2021. And, send your application there and you'll be able to get funding in the next round. And I'm seeing some of the same people getting the funding that got it last year again. But there's been no events in the meantime. I'm seeing as well in terms of, actually getting people back into the industry. Surely the point of the scheme is to get people back working, back in jobs, contacted back in the industry. And then you're seeing that, maybe 250 to 400,000 has been awarded to certain entities to run a virtual event. And surely a physical event where we're seeing, you know, security and bar staff and event crew, site build crew, you know, where you might have, you know, over the course of, you know, a 3 month period when we're planning to come back, we were going to have 300 contractors as well as 50 of our own performers and 70 of our own office staff being able to get back into work in what is an exciting industry and that, you know, society needs in general. So it's,
I wonder, was there any suggestion that it was the nature of your events, as in that there was any public health concern around the events that you know that you run, in terms of just, you know, bringing that many people together in that sort of an environment?
So one of the things that we've done throughout COVID, because we have obviously operations in the Middle East and in Australia where they've managed to do a much better job, I guess, of locking out COVID-19, we've been able to run socially distant entertainment. And as a result, we've been able to, you know, have more experience than, you know, I would say almost every other event producer in Ireland in terms of running social distance entertainment, in terms of keeping people, you know, in their seats. We ran an event in Dubai only a few days ago where we were able to have, you know, everyone at their tables and following all local restrictions. And we've been doing it successfully in Australia for 7 months. So when it, and that's in our application. So when it comes to informing them that we are, you know, we have a track record behind us, you know, we have a good trading history, we pay our taxes, we're able to do these events safely, you know, we're well known within the industry, it almost doesn't stack up. And we're looking at the marketing criteria, and when we're coming back, well, actually, all the things you've marked down on, you know, based on who you've given money to, we supersede, you know, a huge amount of those. A lot of them are very deserving. A lot of them are, you know, people that we work with in the industry as well. And there's some people in the industry who've gotten awarding for funding, and, you know, and we actually provide them with work as well. So they're actually a third party of ours, several of them. So I'm just at my wit's end, because I just have lost all faith in what should be a fair system to, you know, get support at a time when I'm kind of going through it. I'm like, well, if I've given 1.2 million in tax to the Irish revenue, surely we should be able to get some support at a time when we've been on our knees for a year. We've done so much to try and support the community. At the start of lockdown, we raised €75,000 for charities that were suffering from COVID or those who were involved in fighting COVID, entertaining, you know, 50 to 60,000 people online with virtual bingo local, all at a cost of our own, making no profit from it, purely to kind of raise people's spirits and keep, you know, people smiling and bring humour when the whole country is kind of panicked and going into severe lockdown at the beginning.
How much did you ask for, did you apply for, William?
We applied for €748,000, and that will be to run a series of events in every single county almost twice a month, as well as large-scale productions in large circus tents around the country to get us back on our feet and to basically facilitate a lot of the ticket holders that have kind of stayed on board with us from the start.
And, I mean, I'm just looking at the list of entities that were given awards. I think, am I right in saying one of the biggest ones went up to about €500,000? So that would be right at the top end of the bequests, if we can call them that, or the grants?
From what I understand, almost every person who got their funding got a fraction of what they actually required.
So you went in big, basically?
We went in with actually, it's not even pie in the sky. Like, we went in with exact quotes from every single contractor, a list of all of our contractors and providers of production, like in a very, very detailed manner with supplemental documentation, with kind of breakdowns of costings and spreadsheets, so they know exactly where every single cent went. It was all accountable. It had all been checked, and it will be spent. It's not even pie in the sky. It's very much so. That's how much we would spend.
Did a lot of work actually go into, that sounds like a lot of work went into the actual application process itself, William?
We had a team of 8 people working on the application for about 2.5 weeks.
Wow. And apart from the locality issue, or the fact that they made some suggestion in feedback that you weren't geographically spread out enough, was there any other queries raised or any other indication of why you didn't make the grade?
Yeah, so they marked us low on the fact that we didn't really have much of a track record, which is shocking considering that, you know, since our inception over 3 years ago, generating €5 million in income, you know, we've run 798 events, and even during the pandemic, doing virtual events as well. So I just don't understand how we could have received such a low grade in that category. You know, and as someone who's worked in the events industry for 10 years, I'm familiar with almost every applicant and their background. I'm aware of companies awarded funding which have been founded within the last year. And quite frankly, it seems that significant errors have been made on that grade. There was also, you know, around contract employment and, you know, the contracts for artists, for creative, for crew, for support staff. And, you know, we were marked low on that. But there's, you know, surely there's virtual events that they would have much less. And we're looking at, in our application, we know that there will be over 50 contracts of employment generated from this fund across artists, crew, support staff, generating 3 months' worth of employment for workers in the sector, as well as the knock-on employment created for venues and all of the kind of the third parties we have to use who would bring in staffing and security. Our artist costs as a percentage of production and costs should also fall into a satisfactory place, and that our shows, you know, are more about the quality of the production rather than the large fees for international artists, whereas, you know, some of those who have been awarded funding will be spending, you know, maybe $50,000 on just booking an artist, whereas we'll be spreading, you know, our budget across every county doing regular shows and hitting a much larger group of people. To give context, in the year preceding COVID, we sold more tickets to our events than Spice Girls and Riverdance.
You sold more tickets to your events than Spice Girls and Riverdance?
In Ireland, yeah.
Wow. I can tell you that you're talking there about track record, and I don't think it'll be any comfort to you, William, but we were contacted overnight as well by Christy Dignam of Aslan. And he's absolutely devastated as well, because they put a huge amount of work into their application and they can't believe that they also had their application rejected. And Christy is telling us that, you know, he was cocooning when he, you know, at the start of this. He downed tools, hasn't worked for 14 months. And he says that there is no transparency to the decision. He cannot understand why they didn't qualify. And he says there was no appeal. Is there no appeal mechanism built into this process, William?
And this is the shocking thing for public money, is that there's no transparent appeal process for it. We've had to go back and request the grading system on how our application was marked. We've had to email all of the TDs in our jurisdictions to try and get them to add pressure so we could get that document. And, you know, and looking at one of the categories in it, it talks about feasibility, you know. And when you talk about having a very complete and realistic, you know, application process, you know, we had everything done in terms of budget template, realistic audience targets for live, for online, the rates of payment in line with industry standards and oftentimes above industry standards, realistic project timelines. You know, we've attached a full breakdown or application of every production cost associated with the event. The rate of pay is completely in line. It's so frustrating. My heart bleeds for him too, because I understand what it's like when you just get a blank letter that says your application was lacking and we didn't give you any money. And you sit there kind of going, but how and why? And we're trying so hard every time. And I'm looking at, you know, contractors who I'm going, no worries, we're going to be getting you back up and running. Here's the plan for all the events we're going to be doing around the country. We're back at a job. This is finally the light at the end of the tunnel. And now to go back and be like, actually, sorry about that. Now, we didn't get any grant funding. And I'm looking at a wave of redundancies in my office. And it's like, can you imagine how everyone felt at the start of the pandemic when I'm still going through this with my business partners, you know, almost a year and a half later? It's absolutely heartbreaking. And the mental health of myself, my business partners, and those I work with, like, it's in a shambles.
Are you going to be able to stay going, William?
Truthfully, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, every day seems to be like another emergency meeting, looking at spreadsheets and cash balances and cash flow and burn rates and, you know, how long can we last for? This was going to get us through and out the other side. And now, I don't know. They've completely... This is supposed to be a lifeline, this grant. We were supposed to get one last year and we didn't get it. We didn't get anything we applied for. And now we have nothing. You know?
William, will you stay there? Because I want to bring in Paul Byram. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
And Paul, you applied for the last round. Go on.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I here's the thing. I've got to the point, I'm getting a huge sense of disillusionment from a lot of people. And I came to that disillusionment quite a while ago. I don't even bother applying anymore, because I think the process is fundamentally flawed. I don't know who's making the decisions. I'd love to see who's on the panel. I'd love to see who's making these decisions as to who gets the funding and who doesn't. I mean, if you're a performing artist, you know, and you fill out all the criteria, you know, there should be more than a line or two coming back saying you don't fill the criteria for the funding. There needs to be a lot more to it than that. I mean, I saw there during the week was it 2 weeks ago now, the performance, which was lovely to see, of James Vincent McMorrow in the Ivy Gardens, and people were beginning to rejoice. Now, look, that's in my opinion, it's a little superficial, because at the end of the day, that was a performance put on by the National Constable. So James was taken on no costs. I can't imagine. Now, I stand to be corrected. But the likes of myself and the likes of many performers can't get back to putting on shows yet, can't get back to putting on concerts. I mean, I talked to the concert hall myself about booking in a date, and they can't guarantee when we'll have 100% occupancy. So if I go in with an orchestra, as I often do, I need a full house to pay those bills. So the funding and looking for money from the government, I've given up on that. I think it's a flawed process. It's utterly flawed.
So you didn't even bother this time putting in an application?
Didn't even bother. Not even. I have come to the realization quite a while ago that the Irish, much and all as we've been very grateful, lots of people have been very grateful to get the PUP, the music industry in Ireland is very much neglected, and those of us in the music industry are very much neglected. In a time like this, it has been highlighted for me. I heard it years ago growing up. You had to go abroad to make it. You had to go abroad to make your money. You had to go abroad to get some level of respect. I have found, yes, we love music. The Irish love music, but we're not great at supporting musicians, and we're not great at supporting the industry. And this COVID pandemic has highlighted that to me. I've never been so disappointed in Ireland and the way our industry has been treated.
And how are you surviving financially, Paul?
I get my PUP, and I then do online concerts. And I hope that people buy the tickets and they give tips. And you know what? Here's the other thing. The only people buying those tickets and giving the tips are the Americans and the Australians and the Canadians. The Irish don't really buy into that even, you know. Another misconception, of course, which is that people see like the likes of, I know Aslan were on talking, and they see the likes of Aslan, or they see the likes of myself, or whoever it might be. I wouldn't be in the same category of the likes of Aslan. But, you know, people on television or radio, and they go, Asher, they must be loaded. They don't need it. Sure, you're grand. You're fine. How are you getting on? Are you still doing that singing thing? You know, it's a very dismissive kind of attitude towards us. And it is a struggle. And I know people in my game that are no longer in it. I know one guy who was working the West End. He was touring on a show called We Will Rock You. And he is now a driver for Amazon.
Yeah,
doing
yeah.
delivery.
And indeed, Christy was saying to us, and unfortunately he wasn't available to come on the show this afternoon, but he was saying that's a problem, that people think Aslan's such a high profile name that they were all millionaires or something. But he says he has, you know, he's burnt through he's run through what savings he had, and he was really depending on getting something from this scheme.
Well, that's the thing, and like a lot of people, a lot of musicians in particular, self-employed people will understand this. You know, you save away, you try and tuck away a few bob, you know. But like this pandemic for the music industry has gone on now. I mean, I was last on stage in Vegas on March 16th, and I haven't performed in front of anybody since then. So, needless to say, my savings have absolutely been eaten up.
Yeah.
And you know, you are literally just surviving. You're kind of saying to yourself, if I can get through this, if I can just make it through this, I'll be grand. You know, and it's a lot of people are not going to make it. They're going to end up giving up their profession and walking away. And then when the fundraisers start happening, when everything returns and the fundraisers and come on, we get a band in, or come on, we get that band that we had last year to do the gig. They're no longer there. They're no longer around. You know, they've all walked away. The fella playing the drums is now back painting walls, or, you know, the fella playing the keyboard is back on the construction site or gone back to IT. You know, it's just not sustainable. And I just want to know from the government, in some shape or form, give us a list of the people that are making the decision. Is there a panel? Stand up and be honest with us. What is it you want? And why aren't people like Aslan getting the money? They're out there performing. Okay. Do you have to be a pushbox player from Bally Go Backwards? You know, is that what it is? Do you have to be really unusual music? Is it if you're commercial that you're not regarded? Is that what it is? I don't understand.
Paul, stay with us. I want to bring in, you mentioned fundraisers there. I want to bring in Kevin Rowe of Kevin Rowe Events. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Good, good. You applied for both these schemes, the one for last year's funding and this year's funding. How'd you get on?
Yeah, well, I actually didn't apply for last year's scheme because I actually didn't really know about it, because the scheme last year, I think, was for roughly about 5 million. And, you know, I'd done a lot of work on the homework after that kind of scheme was kind of announced. And, like, it was only on the government website for about 13 days in total. So it kind of went up and it went down as quick as possible. It was kind of a pilot scheme to see, you know, how
it might work.
Money was going to be distributed and stuff like that. So I was obviously very deflated about that, and I was looking forward then to the next scheme, which is obviously the scheme that Will was speaking about there, the LPSS scheme. So I put in a pretty good proposal, you know, pretty hopeful that, you know, I'd be one of the people that would be picked, and obviously very disappointed that I wasn't. You know, and it seems to be about 70-80% of the same people, you know, that were picked for the 5 million scheme before Christmas and the scheme that was announced during the last number of days, you know.
And what were you, to tell me about your application, what were you putting in for?
Yeah, so like our main business is all indoor events. So that's what we've been doing for years, you know, it's indoor spaces, you know, anything from 500 to 2,000 people right across the country, like generally fundraising shows and stuff. And obviously that's had a major impact in the business in terms of, you know, indoor spaces. So what we proposed was an outdoor event. It was going to be set in the Midlands. It was an outdoor theatrical experience over two different weekends, and it was to celebrate the life of Fionn McCuill. So it was a different kind of event, all COVID friendly. We were going to do very, very small time slots. We were going to have performers, we were going to have our production crew and different people involved and stuff. So our ask was for 108,000. And, you know, I put a lot of work now into the application, and I was pretty hopeful because, number one, it was different. Number two, it was COVID compliant, and it kind of hit every, you know.
And how many people would have gotten work out of those events?
I would say about 45, anyway, 40 to 45, I would say. You know, in total, you know, and I know it probably wouldn't have been a lot as many as other applications, but certainly 45 is quite a lot, you know.
And what did they say to you? Did you get any indication of where you fell down?
No, and I actually, I got an email on Monday just to say that, you know, we didn't get accepted. So that day then I just emailed Catherine Martin and I emailed Connor Falsey, just the people in the department. And I emailed and I just asked, you know, because I got a generic letter back, and, you know, two of the key points in the letter was, the first one was the project did not meet the aims and the objectives of the scheme to the standard shown by other submissions, and the project was not practically feasible. Now, I know four other companies that got the exact same generic letter back. So I don't see that as acceptable, to be quite honest. It's just a kind of a standard, bog standard, kind of generic kind of letter that goes back to people. You know, everything, you know, that's on the government website in terms of the key criteria, such as, you know, it's to support the creation of employment and wellbeing opportunities, to support the generation of high quality artistic output. I mean, that's a very bland statement, because my opinion of it is it's going to be high quality. You know, the scheme is aimed at established commercial promoters and producers to create live performances. I am that, because I've been doing events for the past 10 years. You know, you must show a proven track record, tax compliance. You must not be funded by public sector. We hit all of those targets. And some of the points that Will made earlier are totally very credible in terms of, there's one or two things, I mean, about public sector. One of the criteria is that you cannot be funded by the public sector. Now, I know that there is entities that got funding before Christmas that have been funded by the public sector previously, and they did get accepted. You know, I know companies that you're meant to have 3 years trading history, and there's some new companies that have propped up in the last year or two that got funding. So a lot of it doesn't make sense. And I just love to know the transparency about how they made the decisions and the judging panel. I've asked specifically who was the judging panel that made that marked all of these applications, and what was the exact criteria. And I haven't got a response yet, so I'm waiting.
I know. I mean, we've seen one. Just to say that, you know, we've seen one of these rejection letters, if we want to call them that. And we know the department said there in their statement they received over 400 applications. There was only 25 million to go around. If all 400 were granted, they would have needed 80 million euro to satisfy that. So do we not? Do we have to accept, though, that there is some?
Sorry, hello.
Yes, is that William?
No, this is Paul here. Paul. So you're saying over 400 applications. I'd love to see, of those 400 applications, how many of those 400 are actually full-time musicians or promoters, that this is their livelihood? Because I know for a fact there's a number of people that put in applications and got them that aren't in this business full-time. You know, like there's a wedding band association that got 317,000. Now, I'm not here getting on this show to call out anybody individually, but.
No, and let's sorry, Paul, I just want to say we're not in any way suggesting that anybody who received a grant from this scheme was not entitled to it. And I just want to be clear about that.
No, you mightn't be suggesting that, but I am. And I'll go on the sword on that.
The programme can't, Paul, just to be clear about that.
No, I know. I'm sorry. I'm being very clear. You don't have to do that. That's fine. But I personally, Paul Byrne, is saying that there's people that have got it that shouldn't have got it.
Paul, I have to explain to you that I can't let you and let the programme be associated with that comment, because it's a legal issue that we can't let pass.
Katie.
Sorry, can I just bring in Annabelle Ashmore, please? Annabelle.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for having me.
Annabelle, you were also involved in a festival and you applied to the scheme. What happened?
That's correct. So I'm the managing director of Wellfest, the health and wellness festival. So it's the first and it's the largest health and wellness festival in Ireland, taking place in May over 2 days. And we have over 10,000 people usually come. So like all these event businesses, The pandemic has been devastating to our business. We are one of the first to have to close, and it's coming up to 2 years not holding an event. So we were really hopeful to have some kind of support from the LPSS, because we've not been able to avail of any other supports up until this point. We were really disappointed to be excluded. And it's not to say that the people that did get them weren't deserving, because the arts, you know, they've really suffered, and we completely agree with that. I guess we were just hoping for maybe a bit more of a wider view of what consists an event in this country, because there's so much more than music, and we feel like our event is actually a benefit to society. And why would people not want to support an alcohol-free event that is great for people's health and wellbeing?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I suppose looking now through the list of the long list of 237 successful applicants, there is a kind of a wide variety of shows and events and arts events included there. A lot of them are music, all right, but was yours unique in terms of this idea of health and welfare in a festival environment?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen any of the winners within our realm at all. So, yes, it may not be the arts in the traditional sense, but you know, it was arts and culture that was what it said in the application. And definitely there's a growing culture of health and wellness in this country. So so we kind of feel like we've been excluded in that way.
Yeah. Will you stay with us, Anne-Marie? Annabelle?
Katie.
Yeah, William?
Katie?
Yes.
Kevin. Yeah, no, I just wanted to make another point as well. I mean, I have no problem with anybody on the list that got funding, and best of luck and congrats to everybody. I'd probably, the main thing is just in terms of the amounts given to the certain entities and the consistency between both schemes. I mean, as I said in my point earlier, you know, you have 70-80% of the same names, you know, from the 5 million scheme to this LPSS.
Yeah, you're saying could it not have been spread out a bit better this time? You know,
yeah,
the people who maybe were lucky the last time could stand back for this time, and more people. You get a first go at it, a first bite of the cherry this time.
Yeah, and it's really it's like, I'm hoping now the department will email me back and just clarify, you know, who's on the judging panel, how they came to certain decisions, and hopefully then if there's another scheme down the line, you know, other people will be in the front of the queue rather than the same people and stuff. Like, I mean, when you go through the list and stuff, I know you've one of the biggest promoters in the country, obviously I won't name them, but like between both schemes, you know, between all the different entities with venues and stuff like that, you're talking about 1.5 million. I mean, that's what they've got out of the scheme. I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but it's a huge amount of money in comparison to the actual amount of money that's on offer in terms of the grants. So 25 million isn't a huge amount of money for an entire industry, you know?
Yeah, I think Kevin's right. Like, it's to do with the actual spread of it. And
when you consider like the actual marking scheme, which I got access to this morning, it gives you kind of the maximum marks available on different criteria. And we had to do a lot of work to actually get access to this. And it was, you know, 10% is only for things like flexibility of approach, health and safety report, and diversity of genres, whereas the heavyweight goes towards things like employment opportunities, audience strategy, track record, and just to the points of the other callers, that's the issue, is that there's a huge amount of people being on there awarded massive six-figure grants, but they have no track record. They're going to be employing a very small group of people, maybe on a reoccurring basis. And so in terms of the actual spread, like, of the finances over the people who can actually hire a few, it is quite shocking. There's some very deserving on there, but there's some who I think just, like, chanced it and got a huge amount of money. And it leaves those of us who are in the industry for many, many years who, you know, are entertaining hundreds of thousands of people, especially for ourselves. We'll have 200,000 people to entertain 12 months after COVID if we were able to get the grant and get started sooner. Those people who aren't going to be entertained, those are staff who aren't going to be hired. Whereas there's six-figure grants going out there to people who, to be honest with you, they'll have a very small impact.
Yeah, okay. We're not referring to anyone in particular there. So, but I want to bring in Paula Lambert. Paula, good afternoon to you. And people will know you, Paula, as the puppeteer behind Bosco.
Yeah, that's right. And I run a touring puppet theatre, a dying art in Ireland, I will say, with the loss of the puppet theatre due to lack of funding. And last year I applied for an Arts Council grant, which was a tremendous amount of work because you had to come up with a whole concept of a show, script, work, previous work, et cetera, et cetera. It took me about, I'd say 6 weeks, and then years of like sort of coming up with the concept of the show before that. And I was turned down. But the main thing that I felt about being turned down was that I really suffered with just total rejection, that I had been on the road, like I was born into the puppet theatre, and I've been on the road myself. I'm in my 60s now, for the last 40-something years. Mm-hmm. And the fact that nobody recognised that, you know, that I've been touring to all these venues, all the venues do. I get tremendous support from all the beautiful venues in Ireland, and I'm very grateful for that. But it's so tough, and there's all this talk of everything reopening and things getting back, and it's the talk about like sort of people sponging on the PUP and not going back to work, and it's really hard on people like me and the small musicians and the people who set up their own gigs and like the little people that like they do all their own publicity, all their own social media. We've had to learn how to do this all along, and then you just get totally rejected, and then you wonder like I kind of look and I say like, what did my dad do all those years with the puppet theatre for? And it's, what does it mean? Does your life totally mean nothing?
I'm very lucky
to have worked in a job that I have absolutely been very privileged and loved doing it. But it's really hard work.
But Paula, just listening to you there, it sounds like you took that rejection from that scheme very personally.
I did. I took it very personally. And people say, don't take it personally. But then you kind of think, this is what I've done my whole life. You know, and people think that you're not good enough. Or, I know that the audiences that come to see me really like what I do because I get that feedback. So that's kind of the motivation to go on and do it. But I think I think puppetry is really important. And I think it's just dying. And like sort of after I'm gone, I don't think anybody will continue because you just need support. You just need support. And as I say, I do get it for all the little, from the little venues in Ireland. But I wonder how are they going to survive? I would have loved a scheme where all of the Arts Council money or a big chunk of it was given to all the little venues so that they could open up and then, you know, help us to get back to work, because we can't go into a theatre and do a show for for 50 people because we'd have to travel from Dublin, the three involved in my theatre. We'd have to travel from Dublin, and then we can, our cost is between 10 euros and 12 euros ticket seats. So it makes no financial sense. So if the theatres were given extra money to have people like me to go back and do shows, how wonderful would that be? And I'd say there are so many, you know, wonderful musicians on this, you know, on the small scale and small theatre shows, and that would absolutely love that. And then everybody be able to get back to work.
Yeah. Yeah, Paula, will you stay with us? And William, stay with us. Kevin, stay with us. I have to take a break, but we will stick with this after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we were talking to Paula Lambert there, of course, of the famous puppeteer family before the break. Paula, you said you didn't bother after the rejection of the first scheme. You didn't apply at all for the scheme that we've just, that has just been announced.
No. I don't think I'd fit into that category anyway. Like, like when you're a puppeteer in Ireland, you don't fit into categories. On nowhere on the Arts Council forms does puppetry come into it. Like, sort of, you know, you have dance and music and circus.
But are you not a live performance? That's a good question, actually. Is a puppet a live performance?
It is. It's a completely live performance. And the whole thing about it is, in the form of puppetry and the entertainment I do, it's very interactive. So you really need an audience. And like sort of an audience spread out, which like is so difficult for every performer when they don't get that absolute vibe from the audience. I was thinking about that in the Ivy Gardens. It was so hard for those performers on stage because they don't get the feedback from the audience. It's such hard work to create that.
And tell me.
So it's.
What are your plans now, Paula?
Well, I just hope that I will get. I have one gig booked in for January, but I would hope to be back on the road. I'm not going to book anything because I do all my own bookings. I approach the venues and then I set up the gigs. And with people like me, that people have to understand as well, when we go to, say, the Dunamace in Portlaoise to do a show, we hire the venue. So we would give them 30% or 20% or 40%, depending on the venue and the size of the door. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's huge expenses. So we can't really afford to go back to work until we can have an audience,
until capacity goes back up again.
Yeah. So, like, there's no point in trying to set up anything now because it's too stressful for everybody involved. So that's kind of it. Yeah, it's a very difficult one. And it doesn't help when you're hearing all the time that people, you know, don't need the PUP and they aren't going back to work, you know, because that has been a lifeline for so many performers, musicians, stage crew. You know, they have absolutely depended on that. And the nature of show business and the nature of people who do the lighting and the sound and stage management and techies and is that they love their job. They all want to be back at work. They're not spongers. They're incredible, dedicated people that, like, sort of, that it's beyond the 9 to 5. Like, if you go in to do a show and you're setting up, people will stay. They will do often beyond the call. They're an incredible. That's why there's so many, you know, great performers in Ireland, because so many absolutely dedicated people.
Yeah. Okay. Paula, I wish you, absolutely, you and everyone in this industry, the absolute best. We'll leave this. We may come back to this before the programme is out, but I'll thank William and Kevin and yourself for the time being. And we'll leave that one there. I want to bring in Sally now. Sally Stevens, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Sally, what, you are a fan of Glenesk yogurt.
Yeah, products in general, actually. Yogurt, they do goat's milk, whole milk, light milk, and lots of different yogurts. As a matter of interest, in another life, I used to drive Conor Lambert, puppeteer, around the country when he didn't drive.
There you go.
So it's lovely to hear Paula there.
Yes, it was lovely to hear Paula indeed.
Anyway, yes, so I'm a big fan and I've actually promoted their products because in recent times they have taken the plastic lids off their Tetra Pak milk cartons. And I think any five-year-old will tell you that what we're trying to do for the world is to reduce plastic. Now, the milk is twice the price.
Is it twice the price? I don't have it here to hand. Is that it? It's more.
It's 1.79 a litre.
Right, okay.
I think it's worth buying for me because it makes me feel like less bad about buying it. I'm still drinking, and my family are still drinking cow's milk. I think their biggest seller is goat's milk, but I buy the cow's milk. And I actually persuaded Super Value in Gorey and Arklow to stock the cow's milk as well. They had just goat's milk. So they have offered on their cartons an offer of a jug if you collect 30 of the tokens which are on their cartons and you send them in, you get a jug. So to be honest, for the crack during lockdown, and I put up a post on Facebook saying, my life is so exciting. I feel like I'm back in the 70s with the Green Shield stamps. Collecting the stamp, collecting the token for a milk jug, kind of laughy. And people reacted very well and thought it was funny, but they also thought, oh, great, where can you get these plastic bottles, or glass bottles, rather? And I said, no. And I told them exactly what it was, that you just have to collect the tokens on the Glenisk. They thought you could buy milk in glass bottles once again, which is what we should be doing. If you think back, years ago, the milk floats going around were electric and the milk came in glass bottles.
That you put out on your step, yeah.
Old people will tell you, you just need to start living the way we used to live. And they're right.
So was that the idea that this was a kind of a throwback to the glass bottle jugs that we used to have?
Well, that's what I thought. That's what everybody thought.
Well, that's what you thought anyway. We don't know what everybody thought, I suppose.
Well, yeah. They've had complaints because the lady on the phone this morning told me that I'm not the only person complaining.
Okay, why were you complaining?
Because in the post I received, so I saved up my 30 tokens. I actually have loads more in there as well. But I only needed 30, so I said 30. And lo and behold, in the post yesterday arrived a huge big box. And my kid said, there's a big box, but it's very light. And in it was a big lump of plastic. So it's a jug, but it's a plastic jug. And I'm thinking, so you're telling me that if I pay twice the price to buy a carton of milk with no plastic in it, and I spend nearly 60 quid on your milk because there's no plastic in the packaging, that in reward you're going to give me a lump of plastic. I just think it's so silly. And I was really cross about it, actually. So what I wanted them to do was to stop, desist. Please stop sending plastic to people in the post.
We spoke to Glenisk. I know you did. We got onto them as well. Mm-hmm. And they confirmed, yes, that they were running a promotion campaign where customers could redeem a milk jug in exchange for tokens collected on the pack. They said, last year we removed the plastic screw caps from all of our cartons. This is in our drive to reduce single-use plastic. It was well received. We got feedback from some customers who were frustrated at what they felt was less convenient products. Some struggled with the opening. The idea to offer a jug was born. So we investigated glass, but as no local supplier of such a jug could be found, the environmental cost of shipping such a heavy load of glass felt entirely counterproductive to us, as well as the safety considerations. The jug material, this is the jug that you received in the post, Sally, the jug material is recycled plastic. It's BPA free and dishwasher safe. It's not a single use plastic. And it acknowledges here plastic is certainly an imperfect solution, but as an alternative to bringing back a plastic cap on every litre of milk, we felt like it was a reasonable solution for those who find the paper-only carton inconvenient. For other customers who are not concerned about the absence of the plastic cap, the jug is obviously unnecessary. Is this what they told you when you got in contact, Sally?
Yeah, it is. But they said that the only mistake that they felt they'd made was not telling us that it was a plastic jug that we were saving up for. So they didn't seem to think there was anything wrong with a company that professes to be organic, that thanks us on the carton for buying carbon neutral packaging. And they don't think there's anything wrong with them rewarding us with plastic.
And the idea of it not being single use plastic, Sally, that this, you know, this is obviously plastic that's made from other plastic. Is that, does that make it less of a an issue, do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think there's any need for it. I mean, we pretty well all have a jug, do we not? I mean, if you, if you're the type that wants a jug, you buy a jug. You have a jug. Jugs are ten a penny. You know, you can, I think that the problem, they might think that the problem is that the, I think the problem was it's so expensive. They probably thought up the promotion and then realised, oh my God, the postage is going to be horrendous. It cost them $6.50 to send me that 400 grams of plastic in the post. And of course, it cost whoever delivered it to them an amount of money as well. So the whole thing doesn't make sense.
What did you actually, when you sent away, when you, did you see a picture of this before you, you ordered
it? It's on the carton. It's on the carton,
a photograph,
and it looks like glass.
Oh, and it looks like glass. So you were fully intending or fully expecting to have a glass jug sent out in response to these 30 tokens.
Yeah.
And in your conversation with Glenesk, did they acknowledge that some people may have expected the same thing?
Well, they said they'd had three phone calls. So I'm obviously not the only one complaining. But three phone calls is a lot because, as you know, most people don't complain. And look, I think that really they should throw their hands up and say, you know what, guys, you're right. We shouldn't. We should not be using plastic. It is part of our manifesto to have these Tetra Paks, cardboard milk cartons. We're an organic milk supplier serving people who don't want to use plastic, and the world shouldn't be using it if they can help it. So I think they should throw their hands up in the air and say, listen, guys, we got it wrong. Instead of saying, no, we didn't get it wrong. We just should have told you we were doing it.
And would you, would this be, go quite apart from your choice of milk carton, would you be actively trying to reduce plastic use in your life generally, Sally?
100%. Listen, COVID
it's hard though,
really
isn't it?
Bad. Say that again?
It's difficult. Like there's, until when you start thinking about it and looking at what you use, there's a lot of plastic that comes at you every day.
A huge amount. A huge amount. And like the recycling bin, everybody's recycling bin is too full, you know. I mean, there are quite a few, if you look, if you try, there's quite a few things now that are coming in cardboard, fruit, even if it's packaged, it's in cardboard. Some tomatoes are coming in cardboard. Obviously, your egg cartons are all right. You just have to be mindful, and we all have to be. Our children are being taught. There's a little 3 and 5 year old I'm going to pick up now in a minute. And they were saying the other day when I saw them, but you shouldn't buy that ice cream because it's in plastic. You should go and get a 99. Now, I thought they were very clever.
That's good to say.
But they're also very right.
Yeah. And of course, there's the whole thing about fruit. When you see, I mean, that drives me crazy when I see fruit like bananas wrapped in completely needless plastic when they've got perfectly natural nature's wrapping on themselves to begin with.
Nature has wrapped pretty well everything. Now, obviously, the milk has to be wrapped. I do not dispute that. And they have done a really good job. I give it to them. Their product is the best that I can buy in the supermarket in terms of milk because it's organic and the packaging is carbon neutral. But don't ruin it by then going against what your ethos is supposed to be.
Indeed. And I have to say, I do love their yogurt.
Yes, but their products are good. Their products are good. I am not saying their products are not. Their products are good.
Will you continue to buy them?
Say that again?
Will you continue to buy them, Sally?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be honest, and the lady on the phone actually presumed that I wouldn't, because she said, I'm sorry to lose you as a customer and thank you for your custom to date. So she actually presumed that I was going to stop buying. But if somebody, I'm not going to start buying plastic milk, no.
Right. Will you stay with us, Sally? I've got Dara on another line. Dara, good afternoon to you.
And good afternoon to you. Thank you for taking the call. Actually, I just texted in a quick note because I was listening to that conversation. And I have to say, while I applaud anybody who tries to reduce single-use plastic, I think it's a load of nonsense to suggest that there's something inherently wrong with a plastic jug versus a glass jug. Sounds like nonsense to me. The answer is, at the end of the day, making sure that what we use is either recycled, recyclable, and multiple use. After that, it's irrelevant whether it's plastic. In fact, there's a lot of sense to saying shipping glass is more expensive. So I think it's a well thought through program by Glenisk, and I think a load of nonsense to say that we should inherently not have plastic. In fact, I'd rather believe that the recycling bin that your caller is talking about is almost certainly made of plastic, and certainly the skip that takes away is the recycling is made of plastic. So let's get the emphasis right. What we want is reusable, recyclable, and if possible, recycled materials, whatever they're made of.
Okay, Dara, stay there. Sally, nonsense, says Dara.
Well, you see, the thing is, it's unnecessary. It's unnecessary. So it's not, we're not buying it. There's no need for them to do it. So it is an unnecessary piece of plastic. So whether it's single use or recycled, it doesn't matter.
How would that have been different if you got a glass jug? That's also unnecessary. And I don't understand your point.
Well, I just think that there's no need to do it. I think there's no need to do it. Certainly for me, it was a bit of fun. It was a bit of crack. Collect a few tokens, you know, just like the Green Shield stamps, as I say, and you get something in the post. And
the issue isn't plastic. The issue is it was a waste telling people they could send away for a jug, and then maybe the people who sent away for the jug need to think about that. Personally, I think it's a nice idea. It's fun to send away. You got something, it's reusable, it's washable, it's durable, and it's going to help you pour your milk. So it's a win all round.
So why don't we just buy the plastic then, the plastic milk in the supermarket?
That's not reusable. It's not. It's often not recycled, and it's often single use.
Not always, though. And it is reusable.
I never saw somebody use a milk jug and throw it in the bin after every use, whereas I think nearly every milk carton goes in the bin, and certainly the plastic tops often go into the regular bin. So I think it's well thought out. People need to understand the difference between single-use plastic, which is certainly something we should be doing everything to avoid.
And Dara, what's your connection with Glenisk, do you mind me asking?
I beg your pardon?
And what's your connection with Glenisk, do you mind me asking?
I like their yogurt.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, Dara, you don't have any connection with Glenisk, just to be clear
about
that.
No. Apart from I like their yogurt, no.
But Dara, can I just put to you that, you know, everyone, as Sally was saying, we all have, well, most of us would have a jug in the house already. And many people who would feel strongly about plastic wouldn't be going out of their way to buy a plastic jug and bring it into the house, but would feel different about...
If you don't need a jug, don't collect 30 tokens and send away for a jug. If you do want a jug, fair enough. But when you have multiple use, recycled piece of anything in the house, if it's forming a necessary purpose, then it doesn't matter whether it's made of glass, which takes so much energy to produce and ship and never decays, whether it's made of plastic, which takes energy to produce and ship and never decays. The point is, I think we're just putting the emphasis on the wrong thing. Single-use glass is a terrible idea. Single-use plastic is a terrible idea. Once it's reusable and is reused, recyclable, and if possible recycled, then there's no problem with it at all. Plastic has a place in the world the same as glass, just not for single-use disposable.
Sally?
But It is a good point. It is a good point, and it's certainly not single use is definitely better than throwaway. 100% I agree. I just think that it's bad marketing for a company that's bragging about taking the plastic off to offer you a plastic jug. I mean, buy my product because it's twice the price and it has no plastic, so you'll feel better. Carbon neutral packaging, and if you buy enough of it, I'll send you a lump of plastic in the post.
Did Glenys, because we just got another statement in from Glenys saying that they offered you a glass jug, but just to make up for your frustration at what happened, but you declined.
They were trying to offer me, yeah. I mean, I think that she wanted me to stop, desist, please don't take this any further. Please don't tell anyone. So they were, I don't know what they were trying to offer me. I said, no, I'm not doing this because I want something. I just want people to stop using plastic if it's not absolutely necessary. That's okay. What I want.
Sally, will
please stop using plastic if it's not absolutely necessary.
Sally, will you stay there, please? And Dara, stay there. We'll be back after this very short break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Paddy Kavanagh, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You used to be a milkman.
Yes, we used to produce the milk. We used to milk the cows, bottle the milk, and do door-to-door and shop deliveries in the town of Enniscorthy back in the 60s up to about 1972 or 3.
Oh, it was your own milk from your own cows?
That was it. It was fresh milk.
Not pasteurised?
Non-pasteurised. And I was just telling my kids the other day that the milk went into two nursing homes. There were only two nursing homes in Enniscorthy, and we supplied milk to both of them.
Of course, that's the height of fashion now, raw milk, they call it these days. But that's what we were all raised on. We were in our house anyway.
We seem to be going back to what we used to do. It's proven to be the best way.
And the bottles that you used to deliver this milk in, were they plastic or glass bottles at the time?
There were glass bottles, and we used to get them with my father's name on them, Chas Kavanagh, Coladine Dairy, Fawn, 271. That's what was on the bottle. And we used to get them from the glass bottle company in Ringsend, and it used to cost us 6D in old money. And we were selling the bottle of milk for 7D, so it was imperative to get the empty bottle back to try and make a profit.
And how long would you be able to get out of one bottle?
I don't know exactly. But we used to put in an order, I'd say, about every 3 months to the glass bottle company.
Right.
So maybe 3-4 months. But it was imperative. People left out. If they wanted two bottles of milk, they left out two empty bottles. And that was the way it operated. We brought them home and they were washed and sterilised and put there. They were washed and rinsed in cold water. We had a special machine for doing it. And used again.
And when did that go out of vogue then, the idea of the glass bottle and the delivery?
In the 70s, the plastic carton started to come in, and we were told, we got a contract then with Snow Cream, which bottled our milk, and sent it into town, and I was chairman of the Snow Cream Producers Group for a number of years, and I remember they changed over to the cartons. But I always felt like that milk tasted better out of a glass bottle. It looked better. And even the really healthy people will tell you, or a nutritionist will tell you now, that homogenized milk is not actually digested as easily as non-homogenized milk, where you see the cream settling to the top of the bottle.
Oh yeah, because that was always the thing—the cream at the top of the bottle.
And it was indeed.
And when you put milk through the process now, that doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen. The fat is evenly distributed throughout the pint or the litre of milk. But I'm told, again just lately, I heard it, that it's not as digestible as the milk that's not homogenized. So, like, are we doing everything, you know, the disposable pack and the homogenized milk, and You know, like I can remember when we had our milk on the doorstep beside the milk that came from the creamery. There was an inch more cream on our milk than there was on the one that came from the creamery. Like, where did the creamery get the cream from? It takes it from the milk.
Yeah, well, I mean, I grew up on a farm, so our milk was never come out of any bottle or carton. It came out of a gallon that was in the fridge, and have the cream would settle on the top, and you the cream was beautiful. I always remember from that was where cream was. But yeah, a child would never see that now.
No, and it's a pity, you know, and I just think that the same way. I always felt that creameries gave away their power when they gave up the door-to-door deliveries and put all the milk into the supermarkets. Everybody needs milk every day or every second day or whatever it is, so they go to the supermarket for milk now. So, like, the creamery gave away that power of attracting customers to the supermarket. I think that they should stay with the door-to-door delivery and give their customers the option of ordering maybe butter or cream or, you know, whatever they sell, whatever they can sell, and do a door-to-door delivery.
I wonder, will they come back though, Paddy? I mean, there is such a drive now for, anti-plastic and environmentally friendly receptacles for everything. You would think this is the most obvious one to come back.
Well, when they go along to make a big deal out of the farmers' cows that are farting in the fields, and they won't use an obvious solution as bringing in glass bottles. You know, there's too much made of what the farmer is doing, but there isn't enough being done on what the farmer produces. You know, when
And what happens to it down the line? I bet you, Sally, you'd buy that milk, wouldn't you?
I certainly would. I'm in the same county now. I'm North Wexford.
Well, Sally, we think the same way, because I just brought back memories to me when I heard you about the glass bottle and about the way that it should be brought back, and I would agree 100% with you.
Indeed. Okay, we'll move on. We have to take another ad. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Dara. Thanks, Paddy Kavanagh.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Or Joe at rte.ie. Now, yesterday we spoke to Philip Nolan, and he really touched a lot of people's hearts with his description of his uncle, who had been in hospital for over 2 months and had no visitors at all until last week, when they finally got in to see him, and the hug and the care and the response from his uncle, who really felt that they had just abandoned him, and asked him where had they gone. And we've had lots more reaction to that and other people in this situation. John, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Your father, Jack, is in hospital.
He is, yeah. He's in St James's Hospital over the last... Well, he's in since the tour date in May this time, but he has been in and out for the last couple of months, maybe the last year nearly.
And how is he?
He's not good at all. Now, he has dementia. He's short-term memory loss with dementia. He has degenerative voice sight. He has a stoma bag. And currently, he's bedbound at the minute. He needs assistance if he was to get out of the bed to go to the toilet. And because they don't, they can't really do that, they more or less have him sitting in a nappy in the bed as well, if he needs to go to the toilet, you know. So he's not good at all.
And tell us about your attempts to get in to see him.
Well, my mother's on the phone every day, because with the dementia that he has, she's basically his voice. And I mean, sometimes the doctors would be talking to him, but there's no point in having any kind of conversations with him, because an hour later he's not going to remember what the conversation was about. So kind of any medical issues or anything, that has to go through my mother. So she's on the phone every day, and every day that she's on the phone, she asks about a visit, can they facilitate a visit, and basically the ward manager keeps saying, sorry, we can't facilitate. Now, in the last 5 weeks, I think she's had two visits. Now, last week, they had a visit with the surgical team, something similar to what Philip had there, and they wheeled him down in the wheelchair for maybe 5 minutes. That was it.
And, you know, is he aware that he's on his own? You know, do you get that sense from
Definitely. I mean, definitely. He's like, he's basically sitting in a hospital bed on his own. He can't operate a mobile phone, so we can't ring him. If we want to talk to him, we have to ring the nurse's station and they can bring a phone over to him. He can't watch television because of his eyesight. You know, you'd want a big screen television in front of him, and it'd have to be up fairly loud because his hearing is not great. So he can't operate a mobile phone. He has no radio in there. He wouldn't know how to operate one, and he's no television rat. So, you know, and with the dementia, he's very reluctant to kind of start conversations with people. So he's basically spending his whole time either sitting in the chair. Now, sometimes they will come and try and get him out of the bed to sit, but he'll sit in the chair. He won't be talking to anyone in there. The only people he would talk to would be the nurses when they come around to him, you know. So he's basically sat there for 5 weeks and probably had no conversations with anyone.
That is
very, very little conversation over the phone, you know.
That's very, very tough. Very tough. And very tough for your mom, I imagine, thinking about him in that situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not only is it distressing for my father, it's also very distressing for my mother. I mean, we can't even see what the effect it's having on him, but we can see the effect it's having on my mother. And I mean, she's worried out of her mind. She's not sleeping properly or anything like that, you know what I mean? Now, I mean, we've been, the HSE have issued guidelines recently, you know, on conditions such as dementia and things like that. And under maybe four or five of the different points, my father qualifies for visitation, you know, nearly unlimited visitation. And I mean, these are guidelines that are issued from the HSE to the hospitals, but the ward managers are just coming back and saying, sorry, we can't facilitate it. Now, I mean, they can't not facilitate someone that's sitting there on his own, you know, not able to talk to anybody else, you know, and hasn't a clue basically what's going on. I mean, if you were to ask him, is he in hospital, or how long he's in hospital, he wouldn't be able to tell you how long he's in the hospital even, you know, because one day just rolls into another for him.
Okay.
Well, and as I said, it's the HSC have issued guidelines, but the hospitals obviously, you know, they don't want to follow those particular guidelines. They want to follow their own guidelines in relation to the COVID thing. Do you know what I mean? But like, as he's fully vaccinated, my mother's fully vaccinated, the staff are fully vaccinated. So I mean, surely there's something that they could do to accommodate him. You know?
Yeah. Oh, John, will you stay with us? I'm told I have to take one last break. Just stay with us there.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we were just talking to John there, who's really worried about his dad in hospital for 5 weeks now and has very, very limited visiting time with his mum. And lots and lots of callers talking to us about this issue. I want to bring you in, though, now, Anne. Anne Reid, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate. How are you? Yeah, I was in hospital myself, three times. I was in Vincent's Hospital and I was in Castlebar. And the hospital were really good to keep COVID out. They wouldn't let you leave the ward in any of the hospitals and they wouldn't let anybody in, you know, so the COVID wouldn't be spread into the wards, you know.
So did you have any visits when you were in hospital, Anne?
No, I didn't, no. I had, you know, sort of some clothes brought in all right, but the nurse would go down or the security man would go down to pick them up, you know. And
But your point is, and I'm just rushing you because I just see we're coming to the very last minute of the programme. Your point is that you think it is a good idea to keep the restrictions in place because it's so important.
Absolutely, Katie, yes, I do. I feel it's very important to keep COVID out, you know. And we go out for a walk with the nurse, maybe fall with masks on us, but nothing more than that, you know.
Okay, Anne, thank you for that point. We take it in, and I'm sure John would say, unfortunately, his father isn't in a position to go for a walk with anyone, and there's many people like him. But that's all we have time for today. Today's programme was produced by Rebecca Meehan. Research was by Andrew Fleming. Kieran Dunn was on sound, and our BCO was Daniel Keating. Stand by now for Catherine Thomas.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.